Ukrainian officials say two children were among more than two dozen people killed by a Russian missile strike on a train station yesterday, the day Ukrainians were celebrating independence from Russia. 6 months into a war that's galvanized Europe, isolated Russia, and left large swaths of Ukraine in ruins, it's worth examining why the capital city of Kyiv did not fall. Isabel Kershudian is Ukraine bureau chief with our editorial partners at The Washington Post, and she's written about the battle for Kyiv as part of a series in The Post about the war. Hi, Isabel.
Thank you for having me.
It's worth remembering that 6 months ago, the world thought that Kyiv would fall in a matter of days. And up until Russian rockets actually started falling in Ukraine, none of the top military or political leaders believed that an all-out assault was coming. You write about how soldiers on the ground were joking about President Biden's warning just before the rockets landed.
Yeah, I think most people, from military command to, you know, government officials, really believed that there was going to be something, but that something was probably going to be limited to the east, where Ukraine had already been fighting, you know, Russian-led separatist forces for the past 8 years. So I think they saw an expansion of that, you know, war, but weren't expecting really for Russia to go after Kyiv. And, you know, as you mentioned, there's these border guards who are right there by the border of Belarus. And all of a sudden they get attacked by kamikaze drones just hours after they had been, you know, laughing about it because they didn't expect it. And they were the first that came under attack. And that was at 4:15 a.m. on February 24th.
Well, there were several key decision points for the Ukrainians that sustained them day to day in the first period of the war. First, President Zelensky decided to stay in Kyiv. Tell us why that was so critical.
Yeah, it was critical because so many Western governments and, you know, foreign leaders had really been instructing him to kind of move himself out of Kyiv, to have a contingency plan, to govern from, you know, Western Ukraine or even in exile from Poland, potentially. But he was very insistent that if he did that, Russia would have an easier time capturing the capital, that how would troops feel if, you know, their leader left? And he actually started to get very annoyed with all of these requests for him to leave or offers to evacuate him. You know, he's not saying everybody felt this way, but he does suspect that some foreign leaders, you know, kind of wanted him potentially out of the picture because they didn't expect Ukraine, you know, to survive this assault. And it would have been easier for them, you know, rather than this long protracted war in the middle of Europe, easier if, you know, Russia does as expected, takes Kyiv in 3 days. And they can just come to an agreement with Russia at that point, negotiate directly with them.
You write that despite not having enough weapons, the Ukrainian military was nimble and even allowed their junior officers to make tactical decisions, unlike the Russian army. What was it like on the ground for those soldiers?
It was a little chaotic, honestly. They were sort of forced to make decisions on the ground because they didn't have the communications ability, you know, to even get orders from higher up. You know, a big part of maybe some of our misconceptions of the battle for Kyiv and really the war in general is because we as civilians didn't lose service, we assume that Russia failed to jam any communications. But that's actually not true. They were jamming, and quite effectively, to where soldiers just a couple miles apart from each other often weren't able to communicate. And so this led to a lot of confusion. And it was just very difficult to kind of make this an organized movement going forward and kind of all operating on the same page. So a lot of it was really kind of decided, you know, spur of the moment and in the moment.
So with all the confusion on the ground, Isabel, how did the military turn the tide? What were they able to accomplish?
A big thing for them was, you know, their own natural terrain and understanding it. They had Russian forces at that point kind of around the Irpin River. That's when General Alexander Sirsky, who was in charge for, you know, the defense of Kyiv, starts to find, you know, local civilians who understand how the dam system works. And he enlists the help of this man named the Diver. At least that's what they call him. His identity has not been revealed. And he explains there's a way to raise the river level, and that would kind of help them, you know, prevent the Russians from being able to cross, or at least make it incredibly difficult.
And really, so it all came down to understanding the terrain, but the village-to-village fighting, right? And the sheer determination of ordinary Ukrainians, the entire population jumping into the fight.
Yes, that was a huge part, and something that, you know, Russia, the Kremlin, really underestimated. They thought they would be welcomed into Ukraine as invaders, as, you know, a regime change, whatever. And instead, people, you know, would inform on where Russian positions are. Thousands and thousands of people signed up to get guns, you know, those first couple days. And then, you know, there was other kind of forms of volunteering, just, you know, making food for the military or bringing them blankets or just kind of helping source, you know, various equipment or bulletproof vests. So all of that played a huge role that it really did. When you look at the manpower as far as, you know, how many people the Russian military has versus how many people the Ukrainian military has, obviously it's a huge disadvantage for the Ukrainians. But when you start to kind of factor in all of these civilians kind of ready to do whatever to defend their territory, then it becomes a little bit more even.
Well, and the offensive also exposed serious systemic problems within the Russian military that Putin himself had spent billions to rebuild.
Yeah, I mean, there were pretty basic logistics issues that I think nobody really expected the Russian military to kind of run into. You would see these long convoys that would just get stuck because, you know, they ran out of fuel. There were a lot of instances of, you know, tanks kind of abandoned on the side of the road for the same reason. And then they really struggled to adjust when, you know, they couldn't take Gostomel airfield, you know, or at least land their heavy equipment there. They couldn't adjust when, you know, their plan of 3 days didn't work out. They had logistical supply issues that seemed really basic. You know, this assessment of 3 days that a lot of Western intelligence agencies had made was based on an assumption of, okay, if they fight the way we would fight, they can do this in 3 days. But they didn't fight the way, you know, a U.S. military or a British military would fight. And instead, just really exposed themselves as having a lot of kind of very basic issues.
You write with extraordinary detail about the daily toll of war. It was so intense on the Ukrainian side that the defense minister needed to see a therapist because he was so emotionally and physically traumatized. And that was just the beginning.
Yeah, he, you know, he said that he realized at some point that it was going to be a marathon and not a sprint, that he needed to kind of take better care of himself and get some sleep and eat. I mean, you know, for a lot of people, there's a lasting effect to this, even if it only lasted 30-something days.
You write that Russia calculated that Ukrainian defenses would quickly unravel, that Moscow could install a puppet government. Instead, you write that the battle for Kyiv would represent the biggest foreign policy blunder in the 22-year rule of Vladimir Putin. How will we look back on those first days of the war?
I think we'll look back on, you know, kind of seeing this Ukrainian heroism and really a lot of Russian mistakes. Had they, you know, maybe had better reconnaissance on the ground or anything like that, they might have actually been able to take Kyiv quite quickly, maybe if they had better flexibility. And now, you know, what's happened is why this is such a huge blunder for, you know, Putin and the Kremlin is that they're locked into this long slog of a war in the East where there's not a ton of gains or losses on either side. And it's really put Russia in a worse place. It's made NATO stronger. And so it's really accomplished a lot of the things opposite of what he wanted. And you don't get the ultimate prize, which was Kyiv.
That's Isabel Kershudian, Ukraine bureau chief for The Washington Post. Isabel, tremendous reporting. Thanks for sharing it with us.
Thank you.